what's so special about that?
We rented a house with another family. But I did have a very fascinating halachic issue came up, because the closest Chabad was over the causeway. And I walked over there the first day, which was Shabbos. And the rabbi of Chabad told me that the...
Okay, we're up to Mitzvah Chaf Beis. All right, Mitzvah Chaf Beis. The first fundamental question, which the Sefer HaChinuch deals with, is why is there a mitzvah of Peter Chamor more than any other animal? So the Sefer HaChinuch gives a number of reasons. I must consider that what's written in the Chinuch might have been censored out, because this has been a very, very, very charged pasuk that he quotes that he doesn't actually get to quote. Right? He just makes the point without quoting the pasuk that teaches it. I would like you just to turn to the last page. Right, if you have it. Maybe I'm gonna start taping.
What are you reading? I'm in the safe room. What are you reading?
The last page, it says Mishorshe Mitzvah Zu. You see it?
Yeah.
Find it. Kidei sheyizkeru ayehudim la'olam hanes she'osolahem hakel b'yitzias Mitzrayim. So that we can always remember the miracle. Fine. The Gemara in Bechoros, Daf Hei, says that the chamor, the donkey, helped us more than any other animal. They helped us with our burdens and our suitcases. Right? So that's one thing. Okay. The donkey deserves some kind of praise or some kind of uplifting of its tumah dika status to be some kind of quasi kodshim. Right, but then look where he goes at this. Sheharag kol bechorehem shenim shelu lachamorim, kmo shekosuv. He doesn't tell us what the pasuk is, right? Now you see in the traditional Sefer HaChinuch, the pasuk that is cited is in Shmos, but that's just the pasuk that says that you have to do the mitzvah. The pasuk he really means to cite is in Yechezkel. And you remember how that pasuk used to get us into trouble, right?
What's the pasuk in Yechezkel?
The pasuk in Yechezkel refers to that prophet speaking about our time in Egypt, which was a land of people that were like horses and donkeys. There was a famous psak in the Tosfos in Gittin and in Kiddushin about a man who was having a married woman who was having an affair with a local Christian official, and the husband wanted to stay married to her and she wanted forgiveness. But you know that the halacha says that when there is a willful adultery, the woman is forbidden to her husband. So Rabbeinu Tam came to her rescue by saying that just as she would not have been rendered prohibited by sleeping with a donkey or a horse, so too she was not rendered forbidden to her husband in this act because of this pasuk that the Sefer HaChinuch is citing here. Now the Sefer HaChinuch is not talking about sexual deviances or anything. He's talking just about that Yechezkel says they're like donkeys and horses.
There's like midstream, wasn't there?
He's talking about the mitzvah there, absolutely.
Does anybody cite Shlu Lachem Po Imachamor or whatever?
Yeah, that the Gemara cites, actually, but nothing here. It just says Yechezkel or Shmos. But yes, in fact, I think the note here, the notation, you know, Imadoma Lachamor, right?
Didn't Shlomo HaMelech write about, it's an analogy about a strayed wife that strayed, but he's longing to be back with the husband again? So according to this, it would never happen. Shirashirin.
Yeah, I don't know if the wife in the story strayed necessarily with other men, but okay, but I mean that's in the Medrash maybe, but the Pshat is not that way. Be it as it may, the third reason that's given is, well, again, the first reason it's a most needed animal for the Jews and helping them leave Mitzrayim. And two is what we say here, Nimshalu l'chamorim. Okay. Just interesting that in later on in mitzvah number 561, which is the mitzvah not to regarding marriage with Egyptians, the Sefer HaChinuch says that the Egyptians today are not the Egyptians of old. Okay, so it's not okay. Rabbeinu Tam wasn't dealing with an Egyptian there; he was dealing with a Gentile man. He's got him in trouble because what are you looking at us as horses and donkeys? If you go look at the pasuk in Yechezkel, what Yechezkel is talking about is that there's you have a stud horse that goes to many different women. That's what that's what Yechezkel is talking about. That the Jewish men were starting to behave like the Egyptian men, who where one man was going to many different women. So the Chinuch mentions that, but without mentioning the proof text, he just says Kimosha Kosov. All right. Maybe wanted to avoid the problem. Okay. All right. So let's just move on now that we know the reason why this applies to the Petach Mor. And keep in mind also that Maseches Bechoros starts off with the laws of the Petach Mor. And the Gemara asks, why are you teaching me Petach Mor first? So the pshat answer that the Gemara does not give, the pshat answer I might give is that the Torah mentions Petach Hamor first. So let Maseches Bechoros mention Petach. You see, it's the mitzvah first here. Right? Petach Hamor comes first, mitzvah Chav Beis. Okay? Right? Okay, but the Gemara gives a different answer. The Gemara says that the laws of the Petach Hamor are relatively light. There are not so many laws. Let's get that out of the way, and then we can learn the Peter Rechem laws about sheep, goats, and cows.
What is the context in which this mitzvah is given in the Torah? What's happening in Parshas Bo when he gives this mitzvah?
So this is also something the Chinuch does not discuss, but I think it's a crucial point. You raise a crucial point. The opening line that Hashem told Moshe to tell Paro was "Bini Bechori Yisrael." Something about the Bechor that is significant here. The very opening line after the end of Perek Yud Beis says, B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, it's for 430 years, till you two B'nai Yisrael, El Tzibo Sam. Next Pasuk, V'yam Dibar Hashem Moshe L'mor, Kadesh Li Kol Bechor, Peter Kol Rechem B'nai Yisrael. Okay? And the Torah mentions the Petach Hamor, and then it says Chopeter, etc., etc., and then it mentions the Peter Behemos. There are lots of Chayos, but only the Peter Behemos need to be. Behemos is just three animals: goats, sheep, and cows. All right. So the context is the very first mitzvah right after we left Egypt. It's interesting that we just read the Torah reading in Devarim, which recaps all the holidays. Also starts Kol HaBechor.
Right.
I think there's a philosophical connection is that for so long in Egypt, the best of our energies were dedicated to endeavors that had nothing to do with us, right? The slave has no notion of time. So when Hashem frees us, so what is a slave has to rush? So for what? So he'll get the job done faster? What for what purpose? For whose benefit? Right, so Hashem gave us the mitzvah, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem, to tell us a notion of time. You can determine the time. Look at the moon, and you decide the calendar. Calendar is yours. You make plans. You put an X 2 weeks from today that you have plans for that day. You mark off this Shabbos for a bar mitzvah. You mark off 2 months from now for a wedding. That's for you to do, because now time is in your hands. So too, the best of our efforts are now in our hands. This is the notion of the fact that of the first of many things is considered superior in the Torah. Someone learned this message very early. His name was Hevel, when he brought Mibachoros Tzono Umechel Mehen, a message that went lost to his brother Kayin, who did not bring Mirashis Pri Adama, he just brought Mipri Adama, which might explain why God accepted Hevel's but not Kayin's. Okay, there are all kinds of mitzvahs like this, Reishis Hagez for shearings, Reishis Pri Adama, Bikurim, Reishis Tavua is called Truma, Reishis Ariso Sechem is called Chala. In certain mitzvahs like Orla, Chodosh, Minchas Omer, Shtei Halechem, also are meant to imply, all this is in the Chinuch, by the way. The first of our wheat should be a special carbon on Shavuos. The first of our barley should be a special carbon on Pesach, when these things begin to sprout. Right? You have Rosh Hashanah Lilanos, says the almonds are beginning to sprout. For things that come out first are always considered special. So that's why the Bechor Adam was meant to serve God in the Mishkan, which of course changed with the Egel for the Kohen and the Levi, so that the firstborn, the father of a firstborn of his mother, of the child's mother, has to pay the Kohen the erech, the valuation of a 30-day-old boy. And he gives a Kohen, the 5 shkolim, to take his place. Okay. All right, so this is the what the Bechor basically represents. Okay, let's look in, let's go inside. And the first halacha, an interesting machlokas between the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, which is, you see it says Zmana. Everyone with me on right at the beginning? Zmana. It's a fundamental machlokas. It's a machlokas in the Gemara, and the Rambam lines up against the Tur and the Mechaber in the following way. The Rambam says that as soon as you get a firstborn male donkey in your flock of donkeys? What do you call
a herd or not a
herd of donkeys? Okay.
What would you call horses? I don't know. Yeah.
Something. Like play this game with the kids with all the names of the groups.
School.
The school is fish.
Stable. I don't know.
What's a murder? A murder of lions?
Crows. Yeah. Crows.
Crows is a murder.
Okay. Crows.
All right. Okay. So anyway. So the Rambam says that you have to do one of two things before that donkey turns 30 days old. You have to either redeem it for a sheep, bless you, redeem it for a sheep and give it to a Kohen, and then that sheep is chulin in the hands of the Kohen, or you have to break the donkey's neck. Right now, it seems stupid to choose that when you could, have Zebizanehne, right? Okay. So, how does the Shulchan Aruch disagree with that? So, the Rambam says that you have to do this right away within 30 days. The Mechaber says, and he never mentions, since Simon Shin Chav Gimel, he never mentions this rule of 30 days. He just says, as soon as you have a newborn donkey, you should redeem it with a sheep and give the Kohen the sheep of any value. And then you can keep your donkey. And then it no longer has the Kedushas Bechor attached to it, right? But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't give a time frame for it. You could do it 2 years later. Only what risk do you run if you wait 2 years?
It's a moon or something?
You'll forget. The donkey will die. You'll forget. The donkey will run away. And then you lost the mitzvah. Okay? Now, what's the status during that time? So you may be familiar with a number of such mitzvahs in the Torah, where, like, there's a standing mitzvah for you to do, and it's not like you're doing an aveira each and every day. It's just that, do it already, because ein mitzvah bo liotcha al tach mitzena, because you may run out of a chance to do it, right? I mean, a bris that's performed on day 9 is less of a mitzvah, but he's still considered gemalt, of course, right?
Are you allowed to work the donkey during this period before you've redeemed it? Yeah. What's in your possession?
So the donkey does not have any kedusha like the kedusha spachor of a behema, right? So, but the kedusha spachor of a behema, there you probably would like to give it to a kohen, because why should I keep feeding it, and because I can't get it to do anything for me. I'm not even allowed to milk it. I'm not even allowed to. I'm not even allowed to shear it. You got it? I'm not allowed to shear it. It's shearing. So, okay. That's so. The question is, what's the nature of this machlokis? So the Rambam seems to be, he's like lishitaso. The Rambam is always worried that people are going to forget fixing the mitzvah if they let it be machmitz. And the Shulchan Aruch says, excuse me, I don't see anything in the Torah that tells you when you should do this. Okay, so that's enough on Zmana. Let's turn to number letter Gimel.
It is interesting to me that the Rambam is saying Ad Shloshim Yom, but in, say, Pidyon of a human, right, of a baby. I'm a lady, so I never had to deal with it. But Pidyon of a male Bechor, right?
Right.
The Chiyuv actually seems to exist at Shloshim Yom, right? And it doesn't, right? It's at 30 days, probably because of the suspicion of Nathel or whatever until then.
Not probably, but definitely.
So there's no such suspicion. I mean, because it's here, right? The Rambam seems to be saying Ad Shloshim Yom, which means right away.
Yes. I mean, let's fine tune your question, because when it comes to an animal, that's called eight days gives it like a kiyum status, right?
Eight days.
You can't shech before 8 days. A human being is what we call as lo yotza midei nefel. I'm not talking about a child that's born and gets very sick. I'm talking about a healthy child, Nebuch, who dies of SIDS in the crib at the 28 days old. There's no avelus for such a child. There's no shiva for such a child. Until a child is 30 days old, we say lo yotza midei nefel. Means it's still not considered like a fully living thing. Now, there is something else which I suspect we're a little better at doing today, called kalu chadashav. This is a little tangential to our issue. Kalu chadashav means that you know the child went full term. But do we ever know that? You know, a woman is overdue. Does that mean that she went full term? Anyway, the point is as follows. I'll leave you with this question. The reason why we wait till 30 days to do a pidyon haben has to do precisely with what Jerry said, is because since we want to extract 35 shkalim from this kohen, for this kohen from the father, we can't be motzi money based on a rove that most children live to be 30 days. We have to, ein olchen b'mamanu sachar a rove. I mean, for goodness sakes, we gave this boy a significant trauma more than 3 weeks before then, a bodily trauma, and he managed to live through that. Why don't we make a new din? Anytime a baby boy actually is healthy enough to live through, successfully live through a bris, can have a pidyon haben the same day. Because if he's healthy enough to have a bris on day 8, of course he's going to live to day 30. But when it comes to the human being, there's no kiyum, like I said before, about the rule of avelus. We don't consider this to be a fully fledged human being until 30 days. Of course, if someone chas v'shalom kills a 20-day-old baby, he's chayav misa. But for mamanos, I'm not going to extract the 5 shkalim until I have this halachic definition, because b'mamanos ain holchen achar harov. Right. So let's go now into in the Gimel. It says Pekias Ha'isur. V'hinei Hadin De Pidyon De Tzarech Liftos B'Seh B'Nosin Hasel Kohen U'Peter Achamor Hu Li Yisrael U'Mutabano L'Achar Sheniftei. So this is a safeguard. Al pi minog and al pi halacha, until the Kohen, until the Israel is pode the donkey with a sheep, it is asur b'hanah. He shouldn't use it. You get it? It's only mutter for him to use after the pidyon. Okay?
There was no. Then you have to break the neck.
Before he breaks the neck. If when? He breaks the neck, then it's really asur b'hanah. Right? Arifas egla and arifas chamor is one of the really very usher things b'hana in the Gemara. It's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin. Why is it in Kiddushin?
Because you can't even kaddish a woman with it.
Yeah, the benchmark for monetary value in Shas is, can a man kaddish a woman with this thing? Chametz on Chol HaMoed Pesach doesn't have value. So if a man is Mekadesh a woman with Chametz on Pesach, she's not Mekudeshes. All right, so this Gimel is saying that until the Pidyon takes place, and the Seh can be worth a lot less than the Chamor, until the Pidyon takes place, we know that you can Po de Hektish with a Shavapruta, right? Until the Pidyon takes place, the Chamor is indeed Asur b'hanah, which is more of an impetus to get the owner to do something with it.
But okay. In the Zman part, we said just that in theory, you could do this. If you knew the last day of the animal's life, you could wait until the last day.
Yeah. In theory. Right. But, right. That's why we should always do tshuva every day. You never know what's our last day.
Right.
Yeah.
At least according to the Mechaber, not according to the Zman.
Right. Okay. Yeah, okay. So and when it says tifteh, so afilu kol shehu, right, that's dalid. The seh does not have to have any particular value. You see, shavui haseh. And the seh can be a balmum. The seh can be a kvi. The seh can be a kilayim. The seh can be all kinds of, right? Afim haseh shava kol shehu. Mikol makom podin bo. Okay. Now, what happens if this owner of a donkey has no seh? He has no access to a seh. What can he do?
Money.
Yeah, he can do it with money. He can podet the value with money. Okay? You see it says, shavui haseh, b'chol davar b'shvuyam. Shom b'gemara dafka seh dinokein, avolim ein lo seh, podet peter chamor b'chol davar. But he has to do so with monetary value that's worthy of the donkey. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
If he does it with a seh, then he could do it with a seh koldehu, a seh worth a dime. But if he does it with a shavui seh, okay, you get it? Then he has to do it with something more commensurate to the value.
So is the market value of the the market value?
Yeah.
Rabbi, the value of the donkey or the value of the sheep?
The value of the donkey, something close to the value of the donkey. Okay. Now, I'll give you a spoiler alert. Now is that what do we do today if a Jew owns donkeys or any animals for that matter? So we do like a Pesach thing. Okay. The opening Mishnah in Maseches Bechoros tells us that this is true about the Petr Chamor as well as the other three animals, is that if it has to be, because the Parsha mentions the words Bivnei Yisrael. So if the Gemara says that even if a Gentile owns the ears, he owns the toes, right? He owns the horns, right? Okay. What's interesting is listen to this. I mean, it's a dispute in the Gemara. It's interesting, this is in Bava Kamma, at the end of Perek Merubah. There's a big discussion in Bava Kamma. It's tangential to someone who steals Hektish that has Achrayos. So while Hektish doesn't usually grab onto a 4 and 5-fold payment for stealing sheep and oxen, but if the animal has a chryos, in other words, I have to replace this animal if it's stolen from Hektish, then he's causing me damage. You know what I'm saying? Usually we say you don't have to pay kefil to hektish. You don't have to pay the dalad hev to hektish. Anyway, so therefore, Bava Kama becomes a big sugya on this topic. And the Gemara there says it differentiates between where a Gentile has the share in the shearings of the sheep, or the Gentile owns the horns. He says, when this animal is shechted, I get the horns. I collect cow horns, and after you shecht it, I get the horns. So if he gets, if the goy has a share in the horns, then it's pater and bechor. But if a goy has a share in the shearings, it's not pater and bechor. Tell me the difference.
Shearings grow back. They're just the fruit, as it were.
Yeah, the shearings is like the peiros. It's expected that this sheep is going to get a haircut one day. It's expected. It's not part of the sheep. It grows on the sheep. If you would cut off a horn on Shabbos and you would cut off the shearings on Shabbos, you would be chayav of the same avera, right? Some kind of oker davar migidulo from a ben chai called gozes or something like that. But the when it comes to this rule, a Gentile who has a share in the shearings does not grab onto the animal, right, to potter this din the way he would if he owned the horns. Okay?
Have you ever come, I mean, has you ever seen a situation in your rabbinic career where someone has either had to sell part of an animal to a guy or someone has actually done it?
I'm the kind of guy who actually goes looking for those kind of things, but no, I've not run into that yet.
Okay.
I went there to stroll to be pulled in Meister Shani, and I've separated Trumas and Maestros, and I've gone through the Orla process and the Revai process, but I haven't been Zoche to work on this kind of either pigeon or I hope to someday. Okay, so let's go into
By the way, Rabbi, you did buy back the chametz, right?
Okay, so the number hey is what I already told you is the hasesh apodin bo humina kvosim and aizim ben zochar ben akeva ben tom ben balmum ktanim dolim. Okay, all right, but I said that before already. Since this pashut ma'od. Okay, it's sort of like a din in Tmura. You get it? You remember Tmura? You know the din in Tmura, Meseches Tmura? There's a big chiddush in Tmura because the Torah says, Bein Tov L'Ra, right? Usually when we talk about Kachim, we learn from the Psukim in Malachi, the Haftorah of Shabbos HaGadol, is that only a korban that's worthy, you know, it has to be Tahora, it can't be a Balmum. But when it comes to Tmura, Tmura latches on to every kind of animal, Bein Tov L'Ra, whatever it is. So too, this pidyon is a type of tmura, right? So therefore, the tmura applies with this pidyon haseh to any kind of seh. Okay? But it has to be a seh. Right? Now, a seh can be a goat or a sheep, but it can't be an egel. Right? It can't be a calf. And that's, you see, in Vav. You can't be a calf, can't be a young deer or any other animal like it. And here it says, right? Because a kfi has a piece of a chaya in it, and kilayim, I know, kilayim is a goat and a deer make a kfi. Kilayim can be a goat.
He is a suffik chaya, a suffik behema, right?
Yeah. All right, but the Torah uses the word seh a few times, so the Gemara makes drashas. Seh to exclude this, seh to exclude that. Okay, these are the exclusions. I'm sorry, Howard?
It seems like it's almost arbitrary that it's a seh that you do the pigeon on. Like, what's the connection between?
Yeah, I think that if you look in the Chinuch doesn't mention this, but if you look in some of the Meforshei HaTorah, is because the Seh is the animal that's the Korban Pesach. The chamor is the chum, you know, the chumrius, the chomer.
Oh.
And the seh is the you know, seizim or sekvosim, which is what we make for the Korban Pesach, and let that come and change the chomer. Yeah.
But you can exchange this for money.
If you don't have a seh, then it has to be shivu. Yes.
No. But even if
what happens if the seh is even worth less than a pruta? But because hektish needs at least a shava pruta for pidyon, I don't know if there's ever such thing as a seh worth less than a pruta. But what was your question, Rami?
If you can't you substitute money for the seh? Even if you have a seh, can't you sell it or whatever it is and substitute the money?
I think so, but that wouldn't be a mitzvah min ha-mufchar. The mitzvah min ha-mufchar is to do it b'seh. It looks to me like there's a Be'er Hagra on this, if I recall, that says that if you have a seh, you have to do it with a seh. You only can do it without it, not with a seh, if you don't have a seh.
Also goes back, if the chamor, goes back to what the rabbi was saying before, right? If the seh, if you're using money, you have to pay the value of the chamor.
Yeah. Who wants to do that?
It can be worth less or worth more, right? So there may be arbitrage there, is what I'm saying.
What about behemoth shvius? What's a behemoth shvius? A behemoth shvius is an animal that was purchased with shmita crops. Now, I think this came up before. Shmita crops shares a certain aspect of chumra that is unparalleled. Charlie, if you were in shul, I think maybe this morning. I don't know if you were in shul this morning, but I did. This came up actually because we were talking about chametz she'avar alav Pesach, and if I go into a jewelry store with $1,000 of chametz, and I exchange the chametz for a ring, and give that ring to a woman and say, Harayat Mekudeshesli, Mekudeshes or not. What do you think? The chametz itself, I don't have to ask you, you know that. The chametz itself has no value on Pesach. But if I go into a jewelry store and barter chametz, I give him $1,000 of chametz, he gives me a ring, and I want a Mekadesh with this ring. Kedushin or not? What do you think?
Well, did you sell the chametz first?
I bartered it, so I sold it. I basically did a transaction.
You own the chametz, Robbie. That's the hypo.
Does the buyer know that it's chametz over Olav HaKasach?
The buyer's not Jewish. He wants the chametz.
Oh, I say you are Mekudesh. I don't know why I say that, but that's my intuition.
I think
the Yisr Ban doesn't trace to the proceeds or something.
Everybody agree?
Yeah. I would say so because the woman would shoot you afterwards if you said that, if she thinks she's married and now she's not.
Well, the answer is that Aaron's correct. She's married. Because chametz, listen to the words carefully, chametz is not tofes domov.
Right.
Chametz does not hold on to its money the way Avodah
Zarah. It doesn't trace to the proceeds.
It does not trace, yes. Avodah Zarah does, by the way.
Right.
If you sold an Avodah Zarah object, bartered an Avodah Zarah trinket for a ring, and now that person owns my Avodah Zarah, and now I own the ring, and I'm Mekadesh with that, and I'm Mekudeshes because Avodah Zarah is Tofes Damav. Okay?
So if you're in the antiquities business, and you were selling these items, whatever was in it, you're saying all your wealth that you may have accumulated from that, whatever you've done is you know.
You may be asking this question with tongue in cheek, but if you recall some years back, there was the shetel problem.
Yeah.
Remember that wig thing from India?
Right.
That was the same kind of problem, because if those wigs were a problem, then whatever those wigs were purchased with was the same problem too. Or whatever those shetel machers did with the money they got for those wigs becomes a problem. So, and Avodah Zarah, by the way, keeps on going. It keeps on going down the line, right?
This is where you need a posek with broad shoulders who's willing to, you know, understand you can't burn the neighborhood down.
But for Robbie's question, we usually deal with a situation known as Sfek Sfeka. It's very, very difficult. to assume that something was worshipped. We say maybe this thing was worshipped, maybe it wasn't worshipped. And even if it was worshipped, Mistama, maybe the person who worshipped it was Mavatalit. Look, it looks like it's a little damaged. You know, it's all kinds of ways that we work on these things. When you find a very expensive trinket, you know, that you're worried looked like an Astarte or something like that, then you know you say, oh, maybe they were Mavatalit anyway. Okay, here's the point that the Chinuch mentions in number Zion. Is that Shemitah is Tofes, it's Domin. But only on one level. In other words, if I have Tofes, it's Domin to other foods. If I have a Shemitah bushel of potatoes and I barter it for cans of sardines, those sardines now have a din of Shemitah. Mm-hmm. They have the beer date of potatoes. I'm not allowed to do schorah with it. Right? I have to eat it with kedusha. I can't cook it with truma oil. Right? Remember that Mishnah, Jerry, in Orla? And then if I barter the sardines for spinach, now the sardines are free. But the spinach is now Shemitah. And the potatoes always maintain their original Shemitah status, right? Avodah Zarah would just now, Avodah Zarah would go the potatoes to the sardines, to the spinach, all three are us. All right, so anyway, so here is his point, is that he says, Ein podin peter chamor bebehemas shvius de la'ochla belo ischara. It sounds like the same halacha that says you shouldn't use Shemitah wine at the Seder. Or for Havdalah. This is Nogea to next year. Next year is a Shemitah.
Can we digress for 1 second? Because this is actually important about the Shemitah wine. Yeah. What is the basic principle? How is it that we can buy wine from, you know, Yarden or whatever in America that's Shemitah wine in Israel?
So it's,
because they make big donations.
Make what?
They give big donations, so it's allowed.
No. But it's not just relying on the heter mechira, Aaron. You can buy those wines with good hashkachas on them.
Yeah, no, they do have good hashkachas. I'm asking, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's called Otzer Beis Din.
Okay.
Otzer Beis Din is where it's like a corporate entity, so to say, that owns the land, and they hire people to work on it.
I see.
It's macha, you know, you shouldn't work the land, but if you have like the nation owns the land, so to say, and the Chazon Ish also is very, very creative about working on ways, not with the Heter Mechira though, but with other ways where you can get wine, but it still maintains its Kedusha.
Right.
So the wine bottle will probably say something on it. Make sure you finish this by a certain date. You see that? Is that?
I've never seen.
I am aware that you're not allowed to waste any of it, and there are people that even like rinse it out and pour the rinsing in, and they drink that.
Right. Correct. Yeah, like they do in Israel, but they the Havdalah and the Seder wine, what they have in common is that people tend to waste a little of it. The second cup, you know, people dip a finger and they put it on the table. So
that's the Hefseid with Shemitah wine.
Why can't they sell the land to a goy?
They can. That's the Heter Mechira. But the rabbi is saying that they do it. They do an even better thing where, if I understood you, Rabbi, basically there's a corporation that owns the land, not like Yarden is a corp, whatever, just to use them as an example. There's some corporate entity that owns it, so the law doesn't technically apply.
I thought Yarden
almost looks like a prisbon. It was a corporate.
No, but if it's owned by a Jew, and he owns the corporation, that shouldn't that doesn't work.
Robbie, that's the technicality. That's precisely the point. It does work. Okay.
Right, because the corporation is in law a separate person.
Xeris Akasov, that it's only you particular
Except that doesn't work if you give someone a loan and you charge interest. You can't say, oh, it's a corporation, he's not a Jew.
Not everything is the same as everything, you know. But actually, when it comes to a loan, there are ways to get around it that way, where you transfer. You don't call it a loan. You call it an investment. You don't call it interest. You call it dividends.
Anyway. No, I understand that, but I'm just saying the concept of a corporation, if it's owned by a Jew, does not work in a loan. I understand you can get around it as an investment and stuff, but they still look through the corporate veil, in a sense, and say it's a Jew and you can't do it.
No, but it's not a shareholder corporation. That's also your base there.
This and Robbie, this it's you're mixing pickles here, but also it's another thing because these are different aspects of how this is working, but the Ribis case has all kinds of technicalities of where you rename what it is that you're investing. But let me just close this aspect of it, is that
Rabbi, I'm sorry for interrupting. I just go ahead, finish, and then
the Shvius has certain aspects to it called La'ochla velo l'schora, La'ochla velo l'hefseid. Right? I give it to you, eat it, not to waste it. So don't use it for Avdala wine where you're gonna spill some of the wine on top of the candle to extinguish it, and then that wine is going to waste. Right? And you can't, don't use it at the Seder because that wine goes to waste when you stick your finger in it. And the ochlo velo l'schora is that if you bartered Shemitah fruits for an animal, so now that animal has Kedusha Shvius attached to it, and now you can't use that animal for a pidyon because what his chiddush here is that pidyon is a type of schora. That's all. Since pidyon is a type of schora, it should have all the rules of schora. When I sold everybody's chametz 2 weeks ago, right, a week ago Friday, it was real schora. There was money. Money changed hands. There were witnesses. There was an Ariv Kavlon. There was someone guaranteeing the balance. There was a down payment made. There was Kinyan Agav. We at least a small piece of plot of land, because otherwise the Gentile has to go into everybody's house and make a Kinyan on all the chametz. Okay, Jerry, you had a question?
Yeah. So by Avodah Zarah, it's a Shvius, right? Where the Easter essentially transfers, right? So it's one thing if I'm bartering an object. Take up Avodah Zarah because it's just easier to. So I trade, I don't know, what an Avodah Zarah trinket for a computer. So that computer has an Easter on it, right? It has the same Easter as the Avodah Zarah. But if I trade that trinket for money, I say, here, wire it into my account. And money, by definition, today's money, is fungible. So I mean, what's Tofes that Isur? I mean, is it an amount of money theoretically? Is it Dafka the wire that I got? I mean, how does it work in today's world?
And it's a very complicated question. How
especially when the money is nothing other than
wires, this electronic, nothing actually enters your account.
Right. It's just a number.
Well, it is today. But even if it's a dollar bill, does that dollar bill, right? It's not. I mean, actually, when you learn Hazav and stuff, they had a different currency system. Right?
Yeah, it's double shein bo mamash. The dollar bill. That's you can't. Dollar bill is a shtar. There's no intrinsic value. Well, $1 bill has no more value than $100 bill.
Right.
So that's why you can't be pode a pigeon a ben with that.
Right. Right.
You can't give someone $5 or $500.
Yeah.
You can't be pulled there with a check.
Last question, Rabbi. Sorry, just to go back. So the concept of Otzer Beisdin, though, is it's actually not a private corporation. It's some public entity. That's what it means. It's like
correct.
It's some corporate Beisdin entity.
Correct, and it's actually they hold from it in the highest echelons, the highest halachic echelons in Israel.
Yeah.
Not as opposed to the heter mechira,
right?
The Heter Mechira, when it first was devised by, I believe, with Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, Spector, and some others in the original Yishuv, is that they said that when we, Bezras Hashem, soon, speedily in our days, gain our independence, this can't work anymore, because what does it mean that, you know, we were only doing this because the Turks are running the show here in Israel. So whether or not we're allowed to sell land to Gentiles is in itself a question. We may be solving a Shemitah problem midrabanan. Shemitah bisman hazeh, almost everyone holds midrabanan because when there's no Yovel. So we're fixing a Shemitah problem with Rabbanan by violating a Doraisa of Lo Sechonim.
Also, the economy just not as fragile as it was when they came up with, the whole thing could have collapsed if nobody could do any work on the land.
Right, absolutely. We never would have had a Yishuv. But now, what I'm told is that it's actually observed significantly in the secular world in Israel. Because it's sort of a
woke.
Environmentalist wokeness.
Right. Leave the land fallow.
Yeah, give the land a rest.
Next year is Shemitah? Next year is the Shemitah year?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so 2022.
Yes, correct.
So wine that will have a 2022 on it, from Israel, you need to be worried about that or think about that.
If it's grown from vine that was planted after Tu B'Av this summer.
Got
Tu B'Av is the cutoff date.
5782, actually. No, not 2022. It's 5782.
Yeah, yeah.
20. But they give on the wine bottles. They give a secular year.
They give a secular. Okay, so I'm sorry. Then you have to be. Could be 2021 or 2022, right?
Well,
right. Wait a second. If it's the end of this year.
The Shemitah bottles are going to say 5782, but you have to keep in mind something known as the Biur date. Okay, I'm sorry for this significant tangent here, but the Biur date means that you have to finish that wine by a certain date.
Right.
You can't leave it in your closet for too long.
This is all on the label?
Yeah, usually it is. Yeah, the Gemara in Psachim, if you recall, at the end of Makom Shinagu, does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Remember that
when is the cutoff date for each fruit?
And Israel.
By the way, grids. Does this also go for grape juice?
Yeah, why not? Grapes.
So that means grape juice has to be finished. So if they're producing grape juice from grapes and it's not finished by a certain date, they got to throw it all out, technically.
So that's a big machlokis also. The Rambam, some say it's consistent with this Rambam in Petach Hamor. I'm not going to go there because it's a little difficult. But the Rambam almost stands alone by saying that Biur Shemitah is like Biur Chametz, that you absolutely have to get rid of it. Most Rishonim say no. You just have to make it hefker. You give it. You can give. You can just leave it out in the street and let someone else take it. The practice in Israel today, if you have, and they give out pamphlets with. I get it here in America with all the everything that grows in Israel. 500 items, everything from kumquats to lychee fruits. When is the last time these items are available in the fields for animals? So, on that date, if you have those things, you just leave it outside like Shalach Manas, and the neighbor takes it, and you take his, he takes yours.
Wow. So, but if the neighbors take it, how does that make it good? It's still Shemitah fruit, or if the animals eat it, doesn't it take on the thing that they ate, Shemitah?
Okay,
Shemitah food.
Rav Yossi in the Tosefta says, Rav Yehuda says that Beer is only if you have to mevire it and give it to the poor, which is one of the purposes of Shemitah. What's the point of the beer date? Is that Shemitah products can theoretically be hoarded in the Shemitah year. I can go into anybody's field and take his fruits for 2 weeks. Enough food for 2 weeks. People can hoard that and then take advantage of we don't want people taking advantage of a situation where it's trying to equalize everybody. So if you don't hoard, because it's not going to help you. You're going to have to get rid of it soon afterwards anyway. All right? So Rabbi Yehuda says that biur products are only mutter for poor people. Rabbi Yossi says, no, there's no such thing as hefker only for the poor. That's Beis Shammai's opinion. Beis Hillel says hefker is hefker for everybody. And therefore, biur is really mutter to everybody as long as the owner of the product made it hefker. Okay?
And how do we pot?
I remember asking Ruina Rosenbaum's son, who's he's my go-to guy for the Minhagim of Shemitah, just what are people doing in the street? You know, sometimes you say, Puk Chazi Mayam Adover, don't ask a posek. What are the Jews doing? So he says what he does is he makes shalach manos. He makes a tray with all of the biur products, and he leaves it out to be like biur, hefker. And then it becomes this is the property of whoever takes it. And you're allowed to even designate. Tell your neighbor, okay, I'm leaving that out in the street. And then the neighbor says, okay, I'm leaving that out in the street. We take it.
Can you take it back yourself if they don't take it within a certain time?
Yes, Rabbi Yossi says that. Rabbi Yossi says you just make it hefker for a shakala, and you can take it back yourself.
Shakala? Wow.
Shakala means, yeah, you know. But that's not that's why I called up Stevie to ask, do really people do that? And he said, no, they don't take their own back. They take someone else's back.
Ah, interesting. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
But so you could take your own back.
You can halachically, yes, but the minog is you don't. You take someone else's.
Doesn't look good.
Rabbi?
Yes, Charlie?
You have to consume a Shemitah fruit by a certain time, yet wine from that year cannot be consumed right away because it needs to mature.
Well, that's the issue. You have to finish it by the beer date.
No. But what Charlie's saying is the wine itself is not ready for 2 years. So it doesn't even, it's not even wine for 2 years.
Is that's the
case? At least 2 years.
Yes. What?
That's how long.
In other words, the grapes, they crush the grapes. Yeah. It's not ready yet. It's not beerable because it's not the food it's going to be until it's in the tank for, you know, a couple of years or 3 years or however long they age it.
Hmm. It has to ferment.
I didn't realize that that's how long it takes. Then in that case, then Mistama, the company makes it hefker before that. However they get a rov to declare it hefker, I don't know.
Or maybe it's not
by the way,
because the grapes have been, those are crushed, and you've got this. Edible.
It's not potable.
The whole thing is inedible until it's bottled or whatever. It's not.
No, not until it's gone through this ferment, the process of being in the vat for a couple of years.
But they might have been edible before that.
That's not the product.
No, that's grape juice.
Once it was declared hefker and then reacquired, then all bets are off. You can have it.
Or it's possible maybe the beer time doesn't run because there's no product.
Also, I see this might also depend on where in Israel, but there are some products in Israel that don't have a beer date at all.
Why is
if
that?
They're available year round. I'm not sure if grapes are available year round in Israel, but that would be a separate issue.
By the way, Aaron, that process is changing. They've found a way to speed up the maturity
in
liquor and in wine, and they're doing things that took literally years and months now. So that may be a bigger problem now than it was before.
Yeah, but
the cost
would be enormous.
This is Chidush the whole yom.
But this is a major industry in Israel. So I mean, I'm sure they figured this out.
Some rabbis with broad shoulders will figure this out.
Yes.
So here's what I want. We sort of ran out of time already, but there's still another mitzvah of pidyon peter behema tahora, and I want to discuss some issues of suffek. The chinuch loves suffek. So what's the suffek? Is I'm not sure if this animal gave birth before or not. So very often we say, Hamotzi mechavero v'levaraya. Let the Kohen prove to me that this animal didn't give birth. We'll have to see. We'll have to see the age of the animal. What's the who has to do the proving under certain circumstances? That'll come up when we do the next mitzvah. Okay. All right, everybody.
Rabbi.